Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, folks, are you ready? On the starter's orders? 3, 2, 1, go, 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 go! Come on, come on!
Hello and welcome to the Rouleur Podcast. I'm Ian Parkinson, and we're at the London Club Roller Racing Championships in South London. Teams from across the capital are taking part in the contest organised by Rollerpalooza, even the team from Rouleur Magazine. If you've never come across roller racing before, it involves riders or teams of riders competing against each other on specially built static bikes, which measure time, speed and distance. If you're still struggling, think of it as a kind of pre-digital Zwift. Casper Hughes of Rollerpalooza, what's the idea behind the London Club Championships then?
Just to find the fastest club in London is quite a simple premise, really. So we've got a wonderful relationship with Condor that stretches back more than a decade, and I basically just tapped up Grant and said, this is what I want to do. I want to do it in spring when there isn't an awful lot other cycling stuff going on. You know, the cycling, the cross season is just coming to a close. People haven't got quite as much impetus to do other stuff, and I thought this might give their season a good kick start, basically. So it's simply just to find the fastest club in London.
Although Rollerpalooza has been going a relatively short time, actually the kind of history of static bike racing, of roller racing, especially in London, goes back a long way, doesn't it?
Yes. So after the Second World War, I think that was the decades after the Second World War was where it was at its peak. There were professional roller races, including Herne Hill's very own Eddie Wingrave, who spent most of their cycling career earning money roller racing. There's a load of reasons why that was. It was a good, cheap working class sport where the equipment could be brought by, you know, the event entertainers, and then people could just get up out of the crowd and hop on and race the pros, basically. And it went on in between cinemas. Sometimes it was the focus of the event. It went with dancing bands. It was, you know, it was very popular in its day.
Why did you decide to revive it sort of in the early 2000s?
I was a cycle courier in London for a decade I look back very fondly upon. And one of the couriers went to the Courier World Championships in Zurich in 1999, where they had a static trainer bike race that was actually sponsored by a beer company called Gold Sprints. And that's what roller racing is called in the States. It's called Gold Sprints. And he saw it going on there, came back to London and said, this is amazing, this is what we saw. And we decided to hire Catford's rollers and stuck it on in a pub in Clerkenwell. A bunch of couriers turned up, got absolutely drunk out of their skulls, and we raced each other, basically. And that was in 2000.
Did you have to have the equipment sort of specially made? Presumably there weren't that many sets around.
The stuff we use now is all made to our design, so you know there were about four good manufacturers. The best one is Birelli, which was made in Coventry, and they're the rarest ones and the smoothest ones and the most delicate ones. But so basically what we've done is a number of different manufacturers' equipment has ended up in our workshop, and we've pinched the best bits from all of them, and we now make our own. Well, we've made our own for years.
And the chances of the Rouleur team being anywhere near the podium by the look of them?
By the look of them? Oh, well, you're having a laugh, aren't you? The podium doesn't go down to 16.
OK, we have Rouleur on the bikes at the moment. Rouleur? OK, Rouleur, are you ready to race? and the start is on us, guys. 3, 2, 1, go, 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 go. Come on, pick it up, pick it up, pick it up.
So I am with at least part of the Ruler roller racing team. I'm with Andy McGrath, editor of Ruler, and executive editor Ian Cleverley. Are you both riding tonight?
Just one of us. Not quite recovered from my 13-second effort, showing how pitifully unfit I am. But it was good fun.
And I'm on management duties, obviously, which involves swanniering, waving towels, getting drinks, mostly beer variety. And yeah, it's going fine, going fine.
I think Ruler is the only team here with a soigneur. And you've got, you know, qualifications. You've got form as being a soigneur, haven't you?
No, absolutely. I mean, we're taking this seriously. We're not here just to make up the numbers.
Your time was 13 seconds something, which is not bad. 13 seconds doesn't sound very long, but it does feel pretty long when you're up there, doesn't it?
It flew by, but I got off and I was kind of seeing stars. I was like, this shouldn't be. I need to do more cycling. And the people doing 10 seconds flat, hats off to them. Fair play.
Now, Ruler issue 18.1 is in the shops now. We'll talk about it in a minute. It's still a fairly quiet period in pro cycling at the moment, isn't it? I think as we're recording, the Tour of Dubai is underway with a win for Cavendish today.
Yeah, that's been a kind of hectic sprinter's race. I'm always wondering how much store to put in the first month of racing, you know, Australia, Argentina, away from the European mainland. I suppose it's all about building momentum. You don't want to start badly, for sure. Like, I think Nibali went to San Juan in Argentina and didn't even start the first stage. He had gastroenteritis or something like that, something horrible, and that is the worst start you'd possibly have. Like, he'll be chasing a little bit of form, I think.
It's also a good time of the effort tearing up your predictions. So just at the point when I was going, I can't see Viviani winning any sprints this year. He just won one yesterday, so okay, you know, fair enough, hats off.
In Ruler 18.1, a couple of articles which really grabbed my attention. The first one, the Svein Tuft, who is a very unusual pro cyclist, isn't he?
Well, apart from being 40 plus, or in that ballpark, I can't remember exactly.
He started in his 30s, didn't he? He started in his sort of mid-30s.
He started late. It may sound like a bizarre thing to say, but he's so Canadian. His whole kind of worldview is just right out there. It's way to the side of how most professional cyclists approach life. Richard Abraham, who wrote the piece, got in touch with him and, you know, kind of basically said, I hear you like to go barefoot trekking in the mountains and dipping in freezing cold ice pools and all this stuff, you know, can we go along and do it? And he was totally up for it, and he was fantastic. I just such an intriguing man. And we also got the perfect photographer for it, Michael Bland, whose tremendous book on the mountains, it just made him the ideal man for the job. So as a piece, it worked on every level. It's really nice.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary life story, and it's his last season as a pro, isn't it? I think there aren't that many eccentric pros coming through. I think they all seem to be stamped out of a very similar mould now, don't they?
Perhaps, yeah. I think it's hard to beat those stories, you know, fighting off wolves with a hockey stick, being at the top of a mountain camping in, I think, 100 mile an hour winds or something like that, which is all in the story. It's just nice because, understandably, so many pro cyclists are really, they're living kind of every season. They're so fixed on that, and that's fair enough. But he sees that cycling is just a chapter along the way. It is just a 10, 15, 20 year period, and it's still a passion as well. That's the other thing, that he'll still go around on his like bomb-proof mountain bike, I think, that will fit like any kind of tire, road, cross, whatever. That's really nice to see.
It's almost like he became a pro cyclist by accident, didn't it? It's one very small aspect of his life.
Well, he talks in the story about attending one of his early training camps, and he cycled there from home 1,200 kilometres. That is special. You know, he's not doing that because he wants to get fit. He's doing that because I fancy doing this. It's a challenge. I'd rather do that than take a plane. Amazing.
Yeah, it's a fascinating character and a really interesting story. The other really interesting story is the tour of Iran, Andy, which you wrote the words for. Some amazing pictures in the magazine.
Yeah, well, originally I meant to go, but I was going on a trip to Las Vegas, so I couldn't make it.
It's Iran like or extremes, Las Vegas,
really? Yeah. The thing is, because Olaf Unversart, our German photographer, did go, and I believe if you go to Iran, you're not allowed into the US for 4 or 5 years afterwards. It's one of those countries on the banned list. So it was a little bit of an FU to Donald Trump on his behalf as well. It's so refreshing and so different to see a race like that. It's immediately, once you see the first few photos, so different to the European races that we know. You know, the landscape is so barren and bare. It's like 80 rider pelotons. And the nationalities, there's so many, like from Asia, Europe. There's David Rebellin, who's still going at 45, 46, 80, like however old he is. But I think the nice thing was the riders recognised that too. They didn't just stay shut in their hotel. They got outside and saw the place as well.
It was almost a story that didn't really need many words. And I think we actually... It did well to do it the way we did, because we had so many great photographs, and you know, half of it's about Iran, you know, about the landscape, about the culture. It's not about the bike race, and that should be, you know, that should be part of the story. It looked great.
The other story that really stood out for me was Olivier Nielsen-Julien's story on the commissaire, the Belgian commissaire, road commissaire, but the complexities of being a commissaire in a stage race, or even a, you know, one day race like Paris-Roubaix, is extraordinary, and that comes across really well in the article, doesn't it?
I think we watch a lot of football, me and Ian certainly, and it's kind of similar to the referee. Like, if they do a good job, no one notices, no one commends them. If they put one foot out of line with a bad decision, they'll get slammed on social media by loads of mentalists. And so it was really interesting seeing the process, like how they can pass, who they're behind, all the ins and outs. It's a pretty selfless job, isn't it? Because I'm thinking they don't make much money.
Well, they certainly don't make as much as football referees.
Well, as a guy says, as a guy who's called Guy says, okay, they make a tenth of the money, but he's sat in a car all day, so at least he isn't running around, you know.
Yeah, the complexities of when you can allow the teams pass to go up to their riders, if they're a breakaway, if they're in the breakaway, or, you know, if the riders start dropping off the back, are extraordinary. And also the fact that nearly every DS is trying to pull a fast one on you, you know, in one way or another.
That's right. You can't measure how sticky is a really sticky bottle. They must know. I mean, like 20 seconds, 40 seconds, there must be some kind of after years you get that, but basically everyone is pushing the rules to the limit now in cycling. If they weren't before, maybe it was more lawless 20, 30 years ago, who knows? So they have to be absolutely on it, and they can't show favouritism, even though I'm sure many of them speak to the riders, they're at the same races, same hotels, that kind of thing. It's a really hard job to have.
And as you say, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, if you made a mistake commissaring in the mountains, no one's going to see anyway, and most of the journalists are not going to report on it. Whereas now, obviously, your every move is scrutinised and covered, and it's on social media within 5 minutes of its happening. It's a pretty thankless task, but it's a fascinating article. You're probably nearly ready for your next heat very soon, aren't you?
Yeah, I've got to go and towel the boys down and give them a quick rub and get another round in.
There's one more heat.
I think we're through, Andy. Yet? I think we're through.
I think you are. I think you have qualified.
It's the Madison next.
Oh, for God's sake.
Before we go, get down, stay down. Anything that has been really annoying you this week? One of the highlights of the week for me was Richard Virenque saying that the credibility of cycling was being dragged through the mud by Sky, which I'm not a huge fan of Chris Froome in the first place, but really, if Richard Virenque feels he can take the moral high ground on anything to do with doping or cycling, it kind of shows us where we are, really, doesn't it? Goes back to a little bit what you were saying a couple of podcasts ago about old pros sticking their nose in where it's not really wanted. But anything that's been upsetting you, Andy?
Mine is the same thing, but it's Cyril Guimard saying that Team Sky picking Froome is a disgrace for cycling's reputation. It's just basically the hypocrisy of cycling never fails to shock me. This is a guy who tested positive twice, who claimed that 90% of the bunch were on EPO in 98, when he was the team manager of Cofidis in 98. People are reading those articles and they're making judgments about Team Sky. I think you got to treat all those with a pinch of salt. Like, there's got to be someone who is cleaner in their career who can offer a more balanced opinion, maybe. Because otherwise, who next? Like Ricardo Rico to comment on Team Sky and Chris Froome? Like, it's dangerous, really, I think.
Ian?
A minor Twitter spat from yesterday, which I quite enjoyed, which was my friends at Pro Cycling Stats caught flack from another sort of cycling expert journo type saying you shouldn't put stuff like this in your Twitter feed. It's like, it's unprofessional, it's not funny, blah 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 blah. Mate, if you don't like it, don't follow them. Simple as that. What I don't like is people telling other people what they should put on their Twitter feed. If you don't like it, don't follow it, block it, whatever the process is. But don't moan about it. Just, you know. Do you want all the good stuff from Pro Cycling Stats? There you go. Suck it up and move on.
So I'll let you get back in the saddle. What can bring a breath of fresh air to current cycling? Stuart Clapp, I imagine. Shall we see if he's there?
Stu?
And we can now welcome the editor of Ruler's Desire section, Stuart Clapp, from his testing centre in Essex. Hello, Stu, what are you up to this week?
Hi, mate. How are you doing? This week I'm going back to my narcissistic sports pimp ways.
Excellent.
And I'm going to talk about clothing. It's a subject very close to my heart. This week I've been wearing the 1216 kit, the Brian Holmes kit that came out. He launched the brand back last year, May 17. And actually the first time I had a proper good look at it was at the Ruler Classic. And he very kindly said, take away some kit. So I've been wearing it and it's really lovely. It's been made with BioRacer. BioRacer make a lot of kit for a lot of people. They make it very well. And I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying that at the moment. And I really like, particularly big fan of the their winter jacket in that green colour.
Because a lot of the stuff that's been out so far from 1216 has been a winter kit, hasn't it? Or winter or sort of cold weather kit.
Yeah, it has, which is, the range at the moment, it's a men's and women's range. I spoke to a few guys recently and they were like, it's just men's. But actually they do a women's line as well, and which we'll maybe showing in the magazine at some point. But it's that thick thermal fabric that they've used across the whole range is the Tempest stuff that BioRacer use, and it's waterproof and thermal, which is quite an interesting combination between the two, really. But I've been wearing it a lot, especially the jacket, because it's been pretty chilly. It's been pretty chilly here. The 1216 and Brian Holmes' comment of only ballet dancers wear ties has been a fairly divisive comment. That it was quite inflammatory. People have really, really bitten hold of that, and they don't have tights in their range. A lot of riders, obviously, they wear leg warmers as opposed to tights. I'm not entirely sure why that is. Whether it's because riders go out when they're pros and they maybe live in a warmer country than Copenhagen, which is where 1216's from, and or Essex, as the day warms up, they might, you know, they can whip a leg warmer or a knee warmer off.
From what I understood from Brian Holmes' interviews and him talking about it, he thinks that most people overdress. So they start off warm enough for the temperature when they leave the house, but then if they're riding fast enough, they get too hot. And I think he says if you're cold out on a ride, then you're not riding fast enough, which is all right for him to say in many ways.
Yeah, that's right. He can ride pretty quick, which is why 1216 is called 1216. It wasn't the original name for this brand. It was Brian Holm wanted to call it the Wolf Pack. But Wolf Pack is also the name of a motorcycle club. And he was a little bit worried that people would be going out, you know, with Wolf Pack written all over their tops and then run into the other Wolf Pack. But they might both be wearing Ciddies. Maybe they can talk about their shoes. But anyway, yeah, so 1216 is actually, it was named, it's named for Brian Holm's 10K record, which he set in 1982, I believe. Yeah, it still stands today. It's, you know, that's good going. If I'd have thought about this, I would have worked out what the average speed of that is.
12:16 for a 10K section.
Yes, for a 10K section. I'm sure there's a load of choppers that have done it with a tailwind on Strava, but in one direction. But that's where the name comes from. In the summer, they're going to do a 12:16 race, where the opportunity is going to be there to beat Brian Holm's record, which is pretty cool. That's a pretty cool thing to do.
As well as saying that he wouldn't make long tights because tights are for ballet dancers, he's got some fairly strong views. I think he recommends not wearing gloves until it's minus 13 or something, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. You get a lot of pros like that. I notice in some of their press shots where they haven't got overshoes on either. I don't know. If it toughens you up, if it makes me soft by putting overshoes on, then I'm soft. You can't have cold toes, cold hands. But you see other riders like Heinrich Hausler. He goes out. You can tell how cold a race is when Heinrich Hausler puts some gloves on. You know, it's like everyone else big glove. But yeah,
But then you also see other pros, especially from the slightly warmer countries, who wrap up to ridiculous extents. I remember Alberto Contador came over and he did some sort of publicity thing down at Herne Hill Velodrome. And it was a mild spring day, I think. And he was wrapped up like it was minus 15 out there. He had scarf on, hat, long leggings, everything.
I saw a few years back, I saw Alex Dowsett out riding. And he was coming towards me down the road the other way. And it was an early June morning. It was, you know, pretty warm. And I could see this guy coming towards me. This is back when he was at Team Sky. And I could see him in full Team Sky kit. And I sort of looked at my mate like, oh, this guy, full team. And then as he got closer, I was like, he wrapped up. Well, your winter, is it? We were sort of talking to each other. And then as he got closer, oh, morning, Alex. I changed my tune because it was like, oh right, oh hang on a minute, yeah, he's got every right to be wearing that. But pros do wrap up, yeah. Pros do tend to wrap up, but you know, it's one of those things. I think we can debate this for a while. I phoned Matt Stevens last night and I said to him, Matt, I'm gonna talk about some winter kit. I actually did some prep for this one today, which is we'll work out, we'll see how well that goes in a minute, but. I said, what's your opinion on degrees? I remember Teo tweeted a while back about not getting his legs out unless it was 18 degrees or something like that. So Matt's was 19 degrees, your legs can come out, so you're in shorts. Between 12 and 18, knees. So anything else, your legs are covered up. So in this country, that probably leaves you a gap of somewhere between the last week of July and the second week of August, and then that's it. You've got to start wrapping up again. It's a very short window. It's a very short window, and we all want a tan. We all want a tan. So, but you do see the odd folk out at the moment with their legs out, which is madness.
And the other thing is that most pros don't have enough body fat, do they? That's, you know, they need a bit of insulation.
Yeah, absolutely. If you did those body fat percentages of pro cyclists, although those body fat percentages apply to the generic population, I think The Rock, like, you know, massive bodybuilder, would be morbidly obese if he ended up on that. And a cyclist like, I don't know, someone like Froome or Wiggins would have been like drastically underweight, that would, you know, so yeah. And cyclists, yeah, they will be affected more by the cold than someone who's carrying a bit more weight, because there's not a lot of insulation going on there. So yeah, wrapping up is he's probably quite key, I'd say.
So you're a bit of a fan of 1216. I also get the impression that you've got a bit of a man crush on Brian Holme as well.
Yeah, it's I have actually. I met him for the first time. I'd spoken to him before that, but I'd met him for the first time at the Ruler Classic, and I thought he was cool. And then meeting him in real life, he is really cool. He had time for everyone. You know, if someone came up for a selfie or wanted to talk to him about the brand or his team, or you know, he made time for everyone. I thought that was a really cool thing to do. I kind of look at him like a like in my celebrity family. I think he would fit in it somewhere. I don't think he'd be the celebrity dad, however, because I've reserved that place for Bill Nighy. So Bill Nighy is my celebrity dad.
Well, I'm sorry, but once again, we seem to have lost contact with Stuart Clapp just as he was getting interesting. Well, that's it from this podcast. Thanks to Rollapalooza and the Ruler crew, who didn't, incidentally, come last. Catch you next time.
So I'd like Brian Holme to take me to school on the back of a motorbike.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.